Welcome to Hacker News Daily, a Bree podcast. I'm Mia.
And I'm Milo. Today we've got a range of stories from the HN front page. Anthropic lays out its position on open weights models. A British-born Canadian man spends 18 months in prison over a misinterpreted IP address. And a Netflix employee is fired after a trust exercise goes wrong. Plus, a federal judge denies Google's DMCA bid against a scraping service. And astronauts describe a strange observer sensation after 6 months in space. Let's get into it.
Anthropic has published a statement laying out its position on OpenWeights AI models, and the Hacker News discussion that followed got fairly heated.
Yeah, one commenter came out swinging, arguing the company will, quote, try hard to use government to kill competitors. That drew a sharp reply from someone else who said, then you did not read it clearly.
And then a third person jumped in and said, maybe the original commenter actually saw it crystal clear. So the thread split pretty quickly over whether Anthropic's position is a good faith safety argument or a regulatory moat.
A fourth commenter got specific, asking which parts of the position are not related to regulation. They pointed to the section about preventing Chinese models from entering our market. Then called out the use of distillation as a means to target competitors and said point three is literally about adding regulation.
So the core charge is that the document dresses competitive maneuvering in safety language. But another commenter quoted Anthropic's actual call to apply such testing to the most capable models, regardless of their country of origin or whether they are open or closed. While noting the position does exempt less capable models.
Right, and that's the tension. Anthropic is drawing a line based on capability, not on open versus closed or country of origin in the abstract. Whether you read that as principled or self-serving really seems to depend on where you already stand.
And that split, is this genuine caution about powerful models or a play to raise costs for competitors? Was basically the whole debate in that thread.
From a heated regulatory debate to a story where a single missing character changed someone's life. A British-born Canadian man spent 18 months in prison because of a typo.
According to his lawyer and reporting in Ars Technica, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police traced harassing messages from a fake Facebook account to a residential IP address. The problem? That address differed from the man's actual address by a single underscore.
A single underscore. The judge accepted the messages as evidence of a crime, but the IP address mistake tied the wrong person to the acts, and the consequences were devastating.
His sister stated that during the imprisonment, her brother lost his job, his house, and custody of his children. Meanwhile, commenters in a Hacker News discussion noted that the courtroom had no technical expertise present at all.
His lawyer described a cascade of system failures. A flawed IP lookup, unverified secondary checks, and an investigation that essentially stopped as soon as a name matched an address.
And observers point out that the defendant's inability to afford a technical expert for his defense probably contributed to the conviction. A missing underscore and a system that didn't know how to question what it thought it had found.
Now to a Hacker News discussion that took a turn into science fiction. The thread was about a post titled, AI Companies Are Shredding Rare Books. And one commenter drew a connection that is not the obvious one.
Instead of making a Fahrenheit 451 parallel, they pointed to Vernor Vinge's novel, Rainbow's End. In that book, physically destroying books for scanning happens in what's called a shred and scan factory.
Another participant called Vinge the last great near-term predictor and recalled that in the novel, shred and scan was actually a short-lived, villain-backed stopgap. It came before non-destructive scanning arrived.
That same commenter urged people to support Anna's archive, calling it one of the best long-term things a person could do for humanity. The thread then dug deeper into the fictional plot.
One follow-up asked whether the shredders were the real villains or whether a rogue three-letter agency executive played the main antagonist. And another reply observed that digital copies depend on readers surviving.
And that last point ties the fictional warning directly to the real-world controversy. AI firms destroying rare physical books to create training data. The argument being, if no one preserves the originals, the digital copies become the only record. And that's a fragile thing.
Finally, a story about workplace culture that went very wrong. A Netflix employee was fired for sharing personal details during a company retreat trust exercise.
The dismissed employee disclosed that they underwent a medical procedure to help process the death of a parent. That was shared in the context of a trust-building activity, and it ended in termination.
A posted comment on the story argues that these retreat exercises are inherently wasteful. The reasoning is that being honest creates real risk, while guarded participation yields no meaningful value. So the exercise itself is a trap.
And the commenter predicts that Netflix will likely lose the resulting lawsuit. The basic point being, if you invite vulnerability and then punish it, a court may not look kindly on that. A security researcher has published details of an exploit against the fleet management platform used by Volvo and Eicher. The disclosure went live on July 27th of 2026, and the researcher says the vulnerability allowed full control over every user and vehicle on the system.
The timeline here is worth laying out. The researcher first reported the issue to the vendor, VECV, on November 3rd of 2025. After 2 weeks with no response, they followed up on November 10th and again on November 17th. Copying in additional contacts.
Then, on November 20th, 2025, access to the internal APIs was cut off. So the primary vulnerability appears to have been fixed at that point, roughly 2.5 weeks after the initial report.
Right. And Hacker News commenters picked up on that timeline. Several noted that the researcher granted what they called an unusually generous disclosure window, while at the same time criticizing the vendor's complete non-response as a terrible way to encourage timely reports in the future.
One commenter went further and argued that vendors like Volvo don't actually want vulnerability reports, and they advised other researchers to simply sell such findings to a broker instead. The implication being that silence from the vendor after a good faith report makes the broker route look more rational.
And that's the tension, isn't it? The researcher did everything by the book, waited months past the fix, and the vendor never engaged. The system got patched, but the process left people on the security side pretty cynical.
Anthropic posted a status incident titled "Elevated Errors on Claude Opus 5. Users on Hacker News reported seeing the API error 529 overloaded, which the company described as a server-side issue.
And the discussion that followed went beyond the incident itself. One commenter argued that even if you fixed the server errors, elevated errors in Claude Opus 5 would still be an accurate description. They said Opus 5 is not very reliable for coding and introduces regressions every time they use it.
Someone pushed back on that and asked whether the developer uses unit tests, pointing out that Claude can be told how to run a test suite in a claude.md file.
The original commenter replied that they catch the regression already during the planning phase with Opus 5, so they don't even let it reach implementation. They called the whole experience a waste of time.
So we have two layers here. The real server-side overload that Anthropic acknowledged, and then a separate dissatisfaction among some developers who feel the model itself is regressing for coding tasks.
And that's a hard thing for Anthropic to message around, because a status incident is about infrastructure. But the commenters are talking about model quality, and those two conversations don't really meet.
A federal judge has turned down Google's attempt to use the DMCA to stop a scraping service from collecting its search results. The case involves a company called SERP API, which gathers data from search engines and sells access to that data.
Let me unpack the legal maneuvers here. SERP API first got a default judgment in a Romanian court declaring that its scraping did not need a license under Europe's database directive. Then, SERP API asked a US court to block Google from sending DMCA takedowns to its hosting provider. Google responded by asserting its own copyrights and asking for a declaratory judgment that SERP API infringes them.
So you've got two parallel proceedings, a Romanian judgment on one side and a US copyright battle on the other. The judge noted there aren't many US decisions directly on point, but was persuaded by a recent EU ruling. The reasoning was that applying for a DMCA takedown in the United States, while already bound by a European member state judgment, could be seen as an abusive end run around that prior ruling.
And it's important to say what this decision is not. It does not decide the underlying copyright question. The judge wasn't ruling on whether scraping Google search results actually infringes copyright. That question is still open, and a full trial on the infringement claims may still happen.
So the immediate takeaway is procedural. Google can't use the DMCA takedown process to sidestep a European court ruling while the US case is still pending. But the core question of whether scraping Google search results is lawful in the US, that is still entirely unresolved. A post on Lockwood.dev by Tom Lockwood gives an update on the bun rewrite in Rust, and there's an interesting methodological note tucked into it. The author included graphs that count Rust files touched in commits, but not the total number of commits.
Right. The example they give: if one commit touches 3.rs files and another commit touches 2, the graph would count 5. It's a measure of file change activity, not commit frequency. The author acknowledged this and said they might fix the methodology later.
Over on Hacker News, the discussion took a more wry turn. One commenter, Brap, wrote, "If you've ever worked at a tech company, you already know the answer without reading any further."
And another commenter, Raincoal, replied to that, "Yeah, the answer is that it's going to working fine for most users."
AI companies spent a record amount on Washington lobbying last year, according to data tracked by Open Secrets and reported in the Hacker News campaign feed.
The surge reflects how aggressively the industry is trying to shape US policy as lawmakers draft rules around safety, liability, and open source models.
Firms are pouring money into influence at a moment when Congress is weighing everything from compute caps to content authenticity requirements.
And the spending isn't just from the big foundations, not lobs. Smaller AI startups, chip makers, and enterprise software firms are all expanding their 600 footprints.
The previous lobbying record for the sector was set just the year before, so this marks a steady climb rather than a one-time spike.
That trajectory suggests the companies see policy engagement not as a defensive one-off, but as a permanent cost of doing business in the AI space.
Trade groups focused on artificial intelligence have also grown, adding policy staff and opening Washington offices for the first time.
So the question hanging over all of this: will that spending translate into the kind of regulatory framework the industry wants, or will lawmakers chart their own course?
Moving to China, a domestic chipmaker saw its shares surge 470% after listing, according to the BBC.
That kind of pop drew comparisons on Hacker News to the investment mania around SK Hynix in South Korea, where retail investors piled in on momentum.
One commenter noted that Tesla similarly rose on momentum rather than product fundamentals, and speculated about what might happen if Tesla dropped roughly 90% to what they called reasonable levels.
The parallel here isn't about the companies themselves, it's about the trading pattern. A story catches fire, valuations disconnect from current revenue, and the climb feeds itself for a while.
Separately, some commenters argued that the Chinese government would back the chipmaker if officials deemed it critical to China's success.
That's not without precedent. The discussion pointed to past government support for companies like Alibaba and WeChat when they were seen as strategically important.
Of course, none of that government backing is confirmed. It's speculation in the comment thread, not announced policy.
Right. But the fact that investors are pricing in that assumption helps explain why a chipmaker can jump nearly 5 times on listing day.
Over in European payments, Decathlon Germany has added the Wero payment option to its decathlon.de and website.
Wero is built on the European Payments Initiative, which itself evolved from the Dutch Ideal system. And iDEAL is already the dominant e-commerce checkout method across the Benelux region.
Users familiar with iDEAL describe it as fast and convenient, and one Hacker News commenter suggested this European-wide rollout might pose a greater competitive threat to Visa and MasterCard than the often-promised digital euro.
That's a striking claim. The idea that a practical, working payment rail gaining merchant adoption could pressure the card networks more than a central bank digital currency that still doesn't exist.
There's some debate, though, about the brand name. Critics find Rero harder to pronounce in English than the unambiguous iDEAL.
Though on the flip side, others consider iDEAL to sound dated, so the rebranding may be intentional, even if it trades away some clarity.
Decathlon is a real retail test. If checkout conversion holds up with Rero, expect more European merchants to follow.
And if enough merchants adopt it, the card networks could start to feel the shift in interchange volume, especially in markets where iDEAL already has deep consumer habits.
Let's turn to something unusual. Astronauts returning from six-month missions describe a persistent sensation of watching their own lives from a half step outside the frame, and it can last weeks after they're back on Earth, as reported by Space Daily.
On Hacker News, a user who spent months underwater on a U.S. submarine said they felt exactly the same thing.
The Navy, according to that commenter, later labeled it dissociation. That term appears in the DSM, the diagnostic manual used by mental health professionals.
The DSM breaks it into common types. Depersonalization is feeling detached from your own body, mind, or actions, like watching yourself in a movie. Derealization is when the outside world seems fake, dreamlike, or foggy.
The same comment ties dissociation to trauma, stress, loud noises, strong emotions, or reminders of past events.
So, this isn't something exclusive to spaceflight. The submarine account suggests it may be what happens when a human brain spends months in a confined, high-stakes environment, whether that's a capsule in orbit or a hull deep underwater.
The Space Daily report frames it as an observer sensation, but the Hacker News discussion brings it down to Earth, so to speak, grounding it in a known clinical concept that plenty of people have experienced without ever leaving the surface.
And that connection between astronaut accounts and submarine crews gives researchers a broader pool of data to understand how long-duration isolation reshapes perception.
The Misago Project published a write-up in 2023 detailing how the team removed React.js from its codebase and adapted HTMX to handle UI interactivity.
And the discussion around that move turned into a debate about HTMX itself. One commenter argued that HTMX overlooks two decades of learnings from the front-end community, works only for small projects, and feels like a declarative language that's actually imperative under the hood.
A pretty sharp critique. But another commenter dismissed that view as uninformed and pushed back directly, questioning whether the critic had actually used HTMX or a similar approach before weighing in.
Right, so the conversation really split into two camps. People who see HTMX as a step backward that ignores hard-won lessons, and people who feel the critics haven't given it a fair shake. And the Misago team's real-world migration sat right in the middle of that.
Let's shift to a different corner of the AI world. Moonshot AI released its QMI K3 technical report and put the model up on Hugging Face, and the practitioner reaction has been as much about cost and deployment feasibility as about the benchmark numbers.
And the hardware requirement is the first thing that jumps out. QMI K3 is a mixture of experts model targeting native MXFP4 execution, and it needs roughly 1.5 terabytes of VRAM. On paper, that barely fits on 8B200 GPUs, but realistically, you'd need 16 for context and throughput.
So the real signal to watch is provider pricing. That's what will tell us the true cost to serve a model of this size, and whether labs are subsidizing API tokens to drive adoption.
On the benchmark side, the model does beat GLM-5.2 on AISI cybersecurity tests, but it still trails the leading closed models. That suggests fine-tuning may be necessary to close the gap.
And practitioners are cautioning against drawing conclusions too quickly. They want to see end-to-end tokens per second and cost measured on realistic coding agent trajectories, the kind that include tool outputs and retries.
There are also open questions around cache hit rates and pre-fill cost under branching multi-turn sessions, plus post-training router load distributions, which is where expert collapse often shows up. That last one is a known failure mode for mixture of experts architectures.
For teams thinking about custom fine-tuning, the recommended starting point is LoRa plus supervised fine-tuning. The advice is to prefer a provider fine-tuning API first before attempting reinforcement learning or off-policy methods like DPO.
So the big picture. A technically ambitious model with deployment costs that make the economics the story to watch, and a fine-tuning path that starts simple before going complex.
That's our show for today. Let's do a quick look back at what we covered.
We kicked off with Anthropic's statement on open weights models, a big policy moment that sparked a lively Hacker News conversation.
Then a wild story out of Canada. A British-born man spent 18 months in prison after police misinterpreted an IP address linked to a fake tip.
We also touched on AI companies shredding rare books, complete with an unusual prediction from someone named V-Dress on HN.
A Netflix employee got fired for sharing personal details during a trust exercise at a company retreat and filed a lawsuit over it.
A security researcher dropped an exploit against the Volvo Eicher fleet management platform, publishing full technical details.
Anthropic posted a status incident on Claude Opus 5, elevated errors that had users comparing it to a game show host.
A federal judge said no to Google's DMCA argument against a search results scraping service. And we heard about the Bun rewrite in Rust progressing into its next phase.
AI lobbying spend in Washington hit a record. Chinese chipmaker shares surged 470% after listing, and Decathlon Germany flipped on the Raro payment option.
We also covered astronauts describing a persistent observer sensation after six-month missions, Migaco's React to HTMX rewrite notes from 2023, and the Moonshot AI Kimi K3 release with scrutiny over real-world costs.
Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.